Friends, I'm turning this evening to Genesis chapter 2 and from verse 18 to 25. That's where we are going to draw our lessons from today. And our title is Building a Firm Family Foundation. Building a Firm Family Foundation. I'm sure many of you here listening to these sermons, maybe you were wondering whether there is anything here for you. You may think that since your children are grown and gone, these messages do not touch your life. If you are single or living alone, you may also believe that these sermons about the home and family have nothing to say to you. But no matter where you are in life, you still have a family. And the things that we are going to discuss today will apply to everyone here, whether you have children or not. We are going to talk about building a firm family foundation. Lessons from Genesis chapter 2. But before we look at our chapter, let's turn to Psalm 127. Psalm 127 and to verse 1. He said, "Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman wicked but in vain." I think this verse will prepare us for our lessons for this evening, the family foundation that we are going to talk about. Because this psalm is about the family. Psalm 127 is about the family and the importance of family and the importance of children in family. The first part, as we just read, is that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. This psalm, Psalm 127, I want to give a brief background about Psalm 127. It's a series of psalms which bear the subscription, a song of degrees. If you look at beginning from 120 up to 134, the headings are a song of degrees. There are all 15 of them. But if you look at 127, it's right in the middle of this psalm from 120 to 134. And that teaches something, because it reminds us of the centrality of family in the eyes of God. It is very, very important in the eyes of God, the family, and the importance of family. I hope all of us know that a nation is only strong as the families that make that nation. If the families are strong, the nation will become strong, and the other way around. And in the same way, we know that a church is only as strong as the families that make up the church. If our families are not strong, our church will never be strong. Everything that happens in our family, in our homes, has serious effects in the church. So it is very, very important what we are going to talk about today. And so for this psalm to be placed in the middle is something very, very significant and important. Another thing that I noticed when I was reading this psalm is that in all of this song of the degrees, you can see that four of them says a song of degree of David, a song of degree of David, which indicates that perhaps David wrote those psalms. But this one, 127, is different, because at the beginning it said a song of degrees for Solomon, and I'm suspecting that David wrote this psalm for Solomon. Because if it comes to David, he said, a song of degrees of David. But to Solomon, he said, for Solomon. So which means somebody must have written it for Solomon. And I'm suspecting that David wrote this for Solomon, because Solomon was to take over from David. And we all know what David, what King Solomon was up to, the building of the temple and so many things that he came to inherit. So I'm sure this psalm was written by David for Solomon.
Look at the beginning. It says, except the Lord build the house, the labor in vain that build it. As I just said, we know from the Bible that Solomon was a great king. And he was the son of King David. He inherited King David. And even up to now, he's always referred to as the wisest man that ever lived. So for him, for this psalm to be written for him, is very, very important to us as well. Like I said, our growth as a church depends largely on our growth, our spiritual growth as families, individuals in our homes. Now, we know that King Solomon, his one of his greatest achievements was the building of the temple for God. The last time that I was teaching this Sunday school children about King Solomon and the temple, I was amazed myself. The size of the building and the amount of work that went in, you can see that he did a very, very good job. And we know that for you to build such a house for God, we need a very good general contractor to build that house for you. We all know what building is and what is involved in building. But to build such a temple as the one that Solomon built will require a very good contractor. So Solomon, because he built this house, we can see that he has a deeper understanding about what is involved in building. Because he will have to understand that building this house is a hard work. Those of you who have built, you know what it is, what it takes to build even our normal common houses. How much more that temple? You will also agree with me that it is a hard work to build a family, married life. It is a hard work to build and to have a good family, a family that we are going to talk about it today. We all know that even in business, it is hard to build up business. It is hard to do everything. In business, you need to get the financial support and the planning and the business plans and all these things. They are hard works. And if even in business, you require that kind of hard work, you don't expect that to build a family, which God has instituted, will be something small. So it takes all the efforts to build the family. And we are going to learn a bit more about this. Who contracted this? Did Solomon use? According to 1 Kings chapter 5, it was a man called Hiram. Hiram was a king of Tyre. And this same king was the one who built the house for King David. When King David was alive, he built the house for him. So he is the man that Solomon appointed to be the general contractor of building the temple. So, in the same way as building such a temple takes hard work and requires a very efficient and experienced general contractor, you don't expect to build a family life, without a general contractor. So in our family life, who is our general contractor? Christ is our general contractor. He is the only one through whom we can build a strong family foundation. Christ, when he was on earth, we learned that he was a carpenter. And we know that Christ in this world, he is involved in three important building projects. First, he is involved in building a home for our future. In John 14 verse 2, he said, I go to prepare a place for you. Christ is going to prepare a place for us in heaven. He is also involved in building a place for our faith. Because like we read in the morning, he said, on this rock I will build my church. So you see, he's involved in three major building projects. One, he's building a house for us in heaven. Here, he's building a church for our faith. He's also interested in building a home for our family. That is why he said, except the Lord build the house, the labor in vain that build it. So we need to get Christ as our general contractor, who will guide us and protect us in building a strong family. In building a family, I'm sure most of you who are here and are married and have children know it is not easy. It is not easy at all to build a family. People coming from different backgrounds to meet together and to build a solid foundation that will help them through this life. Well, there are some marriage counselors, there are seminars, there are books written about marriage. But in the midst of all these things, what are we seeing? Marriages are breaking down. There are troubles, there are divorces, all sort of things are going on in marriages. So, in the same way as Solomon understood that it takes a hard work to build a house, he also knew that it takes a hard work to build a family. It takes the Lord to have a family. And in order to build a house like what David built, we know even in any building, it needs a strong foundation. The foundation must be strong. Otherwise, the building will collapse. I experienced it just some few months ago, a small building that I'm putting up here. Because the foundation was not solid, when they were trying to fill the gap, the whole wall got broken because the foundation was not strong. And that is what it is. If our family foundation is not strong, it will never stand. It will break down. And when it breaks down, it affects the church. That is why I'm very serious about this thing. That our families, even though it's our private affair, it has effect in the church. That is why I'm laying emphasis on this. This building that King Solomon built, according to 1 Kings chapter 6, he says he built it out of rocks. The foundation was made of rocks, which were quarried from underneath of Jerusalem. They were brought out down from Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem. In fact, the Bible says, when you go to 1 Kings chapter 6, it said it was built without the sound of a hammer. People actually carried the rocks and then laid them as the foundation. They went down and quarried the rocks, carved them as massive stones and used them as the foundation of Solomon's temple. So Solomon knew the importance of a good, godly foundation in a marriage. Now let's take a fresh look at Genesis chapter 2 where we just read. These verses, it teaches us about the first family, that is Adam and Eve. And we can learn a lot of things as to how we can build a strong foundation, strong family foundation. So I want to give you some basic building blocks that we will use to build this solid family foundation. The same way as King Solomon used the solid rocks to build the foundations of the temple. And the first thing, the first block that we have to use in building this temple is a God-oriented foundation. A God-oriented foundation. If you look at verse 18 of Genesis chapter 2, he said, "And the Lord God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him an helpmeet for him." That is the verse 18 there. So here we see that it is God himself. He knows that it will not be enough for the man alone. So he said, "I will make him an helpmeet for him." And this teaches us that in order to have a good family, you have to have a God-oriented foundation. The phrase is, "I will make." God says, "I will make." You see? So the first family was formed by God. It is God. It is not Adam who just sat down and said, "I want to build a family." It is God who made it. He said, "I will make it." So it was founded by his power. And then it was also approved by his authority. So you have to have an adequate authority for your family. In a family, there must be an authority in the family. So every family has to be built upon some source of authority. And there are some bases which you should build your family, by which you make decisions. We know that God has made man head of the family. This afternoon we were discussing that whether you are a Christian, whether you know God or not, once you are the man, you are the head of the family. And if you go wrong, the family will go wrong. You must be able to use that authority that God has given you to build your family. So there are some basically two directions which you can turn when it comes to what will be your source of authority in family. Here, in some cases, we tend to our culture. Many people tend to our culture. You can tend to the culture in which you were brought up, or the culture in which you are living today, the surrounding. If you were born in Ghana here, maybe you go and live in England. If that is where you start building your family, the tendency is that you use the culture there to build your family. And then another way of building our family is what's around us today. We look at what is happening today, how people are running their family. We also look to our parents, how they lived their lives, how they built their families. If you are fortunate to have parents who were God-fearing and live by the principles of God, that is fine. That is what you must also use. If they live by the principles and the fear of God, then you can follow them. Now, it is very, very sad that these days people are looking to build their families by what they see on television, the soaps, the telenovelas, or whatever they call them. You see families discussing issues and they are referring to them. It's surprising that sometimes I see families discussing how they should run things, and they can't even see what they are doing, referring to telenovelas, referring to the Kumawoods and all those things. It's so surprising. People who don't know anything are the people that people are looking to build their families. People think family building is a small thing. It's a very small thing in the eyes of God. So we as Christians, we should thank God that we have somewhere to turn to. We have God to turn to as the authority of our family. Now, that is why I'm saying that the family must be a God-oriented. If your family, for instance, were built on materialism, if where you grew up, the family that the parents that you grew up is in, all you care about is possessions and material things, is likely to be a pattern for you to follow, and to be very, very, very sad. If your parents are parents who are always nagging and arguing, arguments upon arguments, shouting at the top of their voices, you are likely to follow it. It will be a pattern for you. You think that is how a family must be built. You can also, there are some families also whose problem, the parents, is alcohol. If you are drinking in the presence of your children, know that your children will copy you. I had the same argument with one of my cousins when I went to the village last week. Her children have all turned to be alcoholics. Meanwhile, her husband was a heavy drunkard. And I remember those days when I went there and they were sending the children to go and buy alcohol for them. And when I was trying to correct them, they were even surprised that I'm telling them that. So the last time I was there and he was complaining, I referred her that, you remember that when you were sending them to go and buy alcohol and I was telling you, you didn't mind me. This is what it is. So if whatever you do for your children to see, the children will follow it. If they see you arguing with your wife every day, it will be a pattern for them. So whatever happens, we should have God as our authority, but not the culture, not what we see on televisions, not what we see other people in the area doing, but what does God say about families? In especially, like I said, in Ghana here, the media, they are making all efforts to destroy family life. If you look at the media, if you watch television and what is going on, they are all trying to destroy the family life that God has laid down for us. The standard today, like I said, is the movies and the whatever it is, that's what people are using. You think that is the way, celebrities, people are looking at them. Meanwhile, how did their marriages end? And yet people are looking up to them, the celebrities and whatever they call them. Now even now, these some celebrities, the other time, one of them was speaking and he was saying that now these days, all they want to have is to have babies, but not to be married. They just want to have babies and then stay on their own. They don't want to have children. They don't want to have husbands, but they want to have babies. Have somebody to have a child with and then just stay and lead your life. It is very, very, very sad. So if this is your source of authority, then you are heading towards difficult days in your life and in your family. Now, I want to show you that the way to a family, a strong family foundation, is to be a God-oriented foundation, as we just read from verse 18. It says, and the Lord said, this is God talking. God is the one who is establishing the institution of marriage and the family. And he said, I will make. Marriage is a divine institution. Family is a divine institution. It is not something ordinary that we just take it that for. You see that Adam and Eve, it is not them. We say that why don't we just have a marriage and let's have a family? No. It came from God directly. So marriage and family is God's idea. So we must learn from God as to how to have a family put together. We must get God's instructions in family. In the same way as your item, your car or your television, whatever, you look to the manuals or you look to the manufacturer's manual to repair it. In the same way, you can only look up to God who created the institution to build that family. You can learn a great deal from books. We know that there are some books that are written and all these things, but you can never rely on them than to rely on one, the one who created, the one who set up the family. God has given us a book, the Bible. And in this book are all the principles and precepts of marriage and life and as a family. If you want to have a fantastic family, the only source should be the Bible. There has to be a source of authority. And the source is to let God be the center of your marriage and your family. Now, what did God say? He said, the husband and father in the family. The husband is the father of the family. We have a wife, mother, and the children. So if you have a God-oriented family, then if you get any problem, where do you go? You go straight to the Bible, what God has revealed in the Bible. There you have a proper authority to your family. God must be the first and the final authority when it comes to building a house. That's the first block that you have to use, God-oriented foundation. The second block is a goal-oriented foundation, a goal, an objective. You must have a goal set up. God gave Eve to Adam, and they were brought together as husband and wife, and they married. You know, so Adam and Eve, they said, therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. That is what the Bible said in verse 24, where we just read. Now, for the goal should be to cleave and to leave and to cleave. You leave your parents, you leave your home, and you cleave to your husband and you become one. So oneness is required. You see, so the Lord is saying that there's a temporary relationship in the family, and then there's a permanent relationship in the family life. You be with your parents for a while, you get to a time of marriage, and you leave your family and cleave to your husband or to your wife. It means to depart from, to leave is to depart from. And then once you are married, you leave your parents. You have to leave your previous family behind, and then you come to live together as one family. So, once you come together, for all the rest of your life, you will be affected by your family. You will be affected by the kind of family you come from, your upbringing, and how you will determine how you show your problems, and how you relate to each other. So, in one sense of the word, you don't leave your family. But in other sense, you leave your family. Sometimes you can seek advice, some advice from your parents because you are your parents, but the right source of advice is from your creator. I'm not saying severe relationship with your parents, but when it comes to building your family, God should be the center. He should be the authority You may have your grandpas and your grandma, which I'm sure they won't be happy if you say just go and don't come back again. But then, once you start building your family, it is you and your family. So what does he mean when he say leave your father and your mother? He's saying that when you get married and have a family, you are putting together something which is brand new. You are building something new. You are putting something together which has never existed before. You are starting a family. It is your family. It is your marriage. And the goal, as he said, is unity. You see? So the new family must be united together. You must be one. That's why you have to cut some strings when you get married. Some of the things that you have to cut from your parents, and the two of you will live together. I know one of the hardest things for parents is to let their children go. But that's how life is. That's how God has created. God says, leave your mother and your father and cleave. Leave and cleave. So the word cleave, it carries several ideas. And it carries the idea of compatibility. For instance, if you are going to have a good marriage and a good family, there has to be a compatibility. You have to become one in that family. And this is one of the biggest problems in marriage. Because we know that this thing doesn't come automatically. You have to work towards that. You see, because a couple getting married, like I said, from different backgrounds and different training, they are not compatible. Even children, sometimes your own children from one mother, one father, they have different ideas, different character, different everything. But all of you are coming together to build one family. So it is not easy, because the truth is that we are not very compatible, all of us. And that is where the difficulty is. The difficulty in achieving a happy married life is compounded by the fact that men and women are basically incompatible. They have goals, needs, and emotions and drives which are completely different from each other. The needs and the goals and they are all different, especially in Africa here. Ours is even different. Ours, when you are going to marry, they tell the woman, if you get a debt, take it to your husband. If you gain money, bring it home. And that idea is in her mind. She thinks that he's living with you. But then, he is also attached to her parents. If he gets something from the marriage, it goes to the parents. If it's a debt, then it comes to you. That is what people tell their wives, their daughters when they are going to. So he's coming with that idea. So you are not compatible. You have a different way of thinking. She has a different way of thinking. And it's a very serious thing. So it takes a lifetime of marriage to develop this kind of compatibility. This afternoon, a brother was telling me it has taken years for them to bring. So if you see them and they are happily going, don't think it's just like that. It has taken them years to build, and then they all come together. So you see that you have a company of people who are different. The wife, the husband, the children, they are all different. But then you are trying to work it out and develop that kind of compatibility so that all of you will become one. You are trying to learn how to talk to one another. You are learning to negotiate with one another. And all this takes wisdom, which you need from God. So here he is saying that you are to cleave together. Jesus Christ quoted this in Matthew chapter 19. He said, what God has joined together, God has joined you together. It's an interesting word, that join. It's like he has put you together. Now you are one, you are glued together. So you are one. And it also means that you are stuck together. The two of you, you are stuck together. So it's like a bond that is strong, that if it can never be broken without any serious damage to both pieces. So here he's talking about commitment. The number one requirement for a strong family is commitment. You must be committed. You must make it your mind. Because marriage, it is not like you are going to try and then you come back. It is for life. When God said love your wives, he didn't say love them when they are this or that. No condition. Just love them because they are your wives. You have married them. So they are your wives. Whatever she does, she's your wife. He didn't say love them only when they respect you. Or love them. No. Love them because they are your wives. In the same way, when he said the woman should respect the husband, he didn't say only when your husband knows God or when your husband is hardworking. No, you have to respect him. He is the head of the family. You see, if you don't know all these things, there will always be confusion in the family. So you are committed to love one another, and every member of that family must also be special and precious to you. Every part of the family needs to be glued together. When we say we are glued together, we learn to talk to one another, we learn to live with one another. So a family foundation is the foundation. If the foundation is to be firm and strong, it must be a God-oriented foundation. It might also be to have authority. It might also have a goal-oriented foundation. And the third block is verse 25. It must have a grace-oriented foundation. Grace, a grace-oriented foundation. Verse 25 says, "And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed." I think it would have been great if there was verse 26, which says that, "And they all lived happily ever after." Unfortunately, it's not there. See, but we all know what happened. We all know what happened between Adam and Eve and the devil. We all saw what happens in chapter 3. See? So they started blaming each other. When God came to see them naked, Adam says, I heard the voice of the gardener and I was afraid because I was naked and I hid myself. Adam was even blaming God. The woman you gave me, and even the woman was blaming the devil. And so one thing you have to understand to have a firm family foundation is that you are all sinners. You have to know that both of you are sinners and you need only grace. So you should know that you married a sinner. You didn't marry a perfect person. You married a sinner. Your spouse married a sinner. This is true even of Christian families. Even if you are a Christian, you are still a sinner. Whether you are saved or whatever, you are still a sinner. The parents must be saved, the children may all be saved, but you are still sinners. So you still go through temptations. Because you are a sinner, there will be temptations. And then this is where we should understand. We should know that because of our depravity, because of our sin, we are all selfish. Everybody. We are all selfish. That is why when God confronted Adam by his sin, what did he said? "Is that woman?" So it's all her fault. And then the woman too said, "Is that snake?" Adam even got worse, like I said, that he said, "It is that woman you gave, it is the woman you gave me." So he was blaming. So you see that we are all selfish because we are all sinners. So what happened in chapter 3? We see that, "And Adam also and to his wife did the Lord God make clothes." You see, when they ran away because they were naked, God clothed them. That is the first salvation. God gave them clothes of a sheepskin, which is a picture of salvation, a picture of grace. Grace covered their nakedness. Grace covered their sin. And not only are we sinless, like I said, we are also selfish. And we are damaged goods. That's the kind of people we are. We are all, even though we are all sinners and we are damaged goods, yet by the grace of God, God can rescue us. God can save us. God can change us. And then make us a people of himself. So, in the same way as God can do a work of grace in your life, you don't have to be sorry that where you are today. Everything that you do, you should know that you are not perfect. So when one offends the other, in the same way as grace has saved you, you must also know that your spouse, who is a sinner, will offend you. So what must be done when this offense comes? The greatest example of this grace-oriented family is that of the prodigal son. We all know what the prodigal son did. He said, "Father, give me the portion of good that falleth in me." You see, he proved that he was a sinner, and he proved that he was selfish. He was a sinner, he was selfish. He took all what he thought was belonging to him, went to a faraway country. And then what did he do? He said he joined himself. enjoying himself, he glued himself to some prostitutes and other people, and he wasted all the money. What did he do? When he realized what he has done, he came back. He came back himself and said, I don't deserve to be a son anymore, but I will be better off being a servant of my daddy than to live down here. Now he realized that even if he goes to the father and becomes a servant, it's better than to live in the kind of life he was living over there, in the feeding pigs and eating their food and all those things. But what did the father say? Did the father say, oh, you embarrassed me before my whole family. You embarrassed me at church. So don't show your face here again. Go back to where you came from. Is that what the father said? No. The boy came back. He didn't deserve anything because he had already taken all that he wanted. He deserved, all what he deserved was judgment. He deserved hell. But then, when he said, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son, he didn't even finish talking. And then the father put his arms around him, kissed him, and then he said, come on, come home, my son, come back. See, that is what it takes to have a grace-oriented family. There are times when all of us need forgiveness. Once you are sinners and you are selfish, one will offend the other. There's no way you can live as a family for years and no one will offend the other. The offense will come. But when it comes, obviously there will be reactions. But when you see the other, if the person is showing remorse, then there must be forgiveness. You can't hold on forever because you are also a sinner. You are all sinners and you are all selfish. So there are times when we don't need what we deserve. There are times when our transgressions are so great that forgiveness is difficult. I know, because I'm also a married person. Certain things will happen that you think, as for this, no, I will never. But who are you? If God has said the same thing to you, where will be your stand today? So, to build a strong family requires a grace-oriented foundation. This is what we must all know. We must have a heart to forgive. If one offends the other and the person shows genuine repentance and genuine remorse over the sin or whatever he has done, there must be room for genuine forgiveness and the restoration. The same way as we saw from the prodigal son. So if you want to build a family with a firm biblical foundation, first, the first block is that you need a God-oriented family. That gives a family authority, because God then is the authority of that family. We need to have a goal-oriented family, and that gives a family unity. What is your goal? Your goal is to become one, togetherness. To have that, you must have a goal. That is your goal. You want to become one and build your family. And also, you need a grace-oriented family that gives a family beauty. When someone offends the other and the two of you can agree and come back together, it gives a strong and a beautiful family. So what is going on in your family today? Are there some needs that should be addressed today? Is there forgiveness that needs to be extended today? Is there confession that needs to be made today? Have you done something wrong to your other spouse and you need to confess and ask for forgiveness? Or what exactly is a family? There's no situation that God cannot deal with. Whatever it is, like the prodigal son, forgiveness is very, very important. Know who you are, that you are all sinners and you are all selfish. You can never, never have a life of one being perfect and the other being a sinner. You are all sinners. You have been saved by grace. And that same grace must guide you in your family to help build a strong family foundation. And like I said earlier on, a strong family foundation helps our church to also be a strong spiritual church. And my prayer is that we'll be able to build this kind of foundation in our families so that our churches will also grow. Let's turn to our last hymn for the evening, hymn number 509.